Welcome to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. This week, Discord is now in session. Andrea brings the case against her husband, Scott. Andrea loves to sing along with her favorite songs by artists from Maroon 5 to Jonathan Coulton, but doesn't think it's important to be especially careful about the notes or the key. Her husband, Scott, says if she's going to sing, she needs to sing the right way. Who's right? Who's wrong? Only one man can decide. Please rise as Judge John Hodgman enters the courtroom.
This court enjoys youthful hyperbole more than anything in all the known universe, but Tyler is deranged, and not merely because he is talking about Maroon 5. Even if our splintered culture still allowed for such a thing, how could Maroon 5 be the band of his generation? Not only have I, a 41-year-old, heard of this rock band, it is also a rock band signed to a major label that is played on terrestrial radio. That's as old-timey and esoteric a genre these days as steampunk bluegrass, which I am confident exists. Even I know that the band of this generation is some 9-year-old Danish DJ emailing back and forth Earl Sweatshirt Fleetwood Mac mashup with a 29-year-old Cambodian-Canadian female banjoist in Winnipeg that he met on SoundCloud, which I am also confident exists. Jesse, bail them in. No, Jesse Thorne, swear them in.
Please rise and raise your right hands. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God or whatever?
I do.
Do you swear to abide by Judge John Hodgman's ruling, despite the fact that he has perfect pitch, just like his Martha's Vineyard golfing buddy, Chevy Chase?
I do.
Very well. Judge Hodgman?
Scott and Andrea, for an immediate summary judgment in your favor, can you make an educated guess as to the piece of culture that I referenced as I entered the courtroom? Hint, you are not time travelers, so you will not know the precise answer, but you can make an educated guess. Andrea, an educated guess.
An educated guess is that it is a review or some column written about music in the New York Times.
Interesting. Scott? Interesting, but not correct. But Scott?
It sounds like Neal Stephenson, but I can't think of him actually saying anything like that in any of his books. That has the same kind of language, particularly referencing steampunk bluegrass.
Well, your flattery will get you somewhere in the court, for that is indeed the words not of Neal Stephenson, but of Judge John Hodgman in the forthcoming Judge John Hodgman Rules column in the New York Times Magazine. So in a way, Andrea, you were very close.
I should have said the magazine.
In this forthcoming column, a residence administrator at a college takes issue with her 21-year-old student employee, Tyler, who claims that not only is Maroon 5 his favorite band, but the best band and the band of his generation. You will recall from my ruling as I entered the courtroom that Tyler is deranged. But Andrea, I'm glad that you got so close to guessing, because I am almost completely prepared to grant you an immediate summary judgment in your favor anyway. For, if I understand it correctly, you like to sing and your husband wants you to stop singing. Is that correct?
It's not that he doesn't want me to sing. He, when I sing like when Tom Cruise is in the movie, you know the movie I'm talking about. He's driving along and singing really loud, Jerry Maguire.
That's one. That's
so he's driving along and he's trying to find a song on the radio that he just wants to sing out loud and strong. And he sings along to Free Falling. So I like to sing. I just like to sing along. I'm not saying I'm a singer. I just like to sing along, like in the car, in the house, in the shower. So he... I'm bringing the case because he will say things like, if you're...
I was just going to say, nothing you've described is out of the ordinary for most normal humans. Most normal humans like to sing like Tom Cruise and Jerry Maguire. So where is
the
trouble?
He says that if I am singing, I should be singing on pitch and on key, which key, I don't really know. I kind of know what he means, but not really. So... because if not, it is offensive to, or Yes, offensive to the person that wrote the song.
Scott, is Andrea misstating your position?
Yep, she is.
Will you?
No.
Andrea?
That wasn't me.
No. Well, is there another wife in the courtroom who is audibly sighing? I understand your position, Andrea. Let me hear Scott state his position in his own words.
I feel that if she's going to sing along with some recording or with somebody else who is singing, and there's other people in the room, she should make a reasonable effort to match the same key as the other performance.
And why do you feel that way?
I feel that way both for the respect of the other person performing, if there's another person singing in the room, and for the respect of the people who have to listen.
But wait, are you guys having family hoedowns? Why is there so much singing going on in your house where people are coming over and you're all singing together? Are you a member of a cult?
Close enough. We have 5 kids.
I see. So when you're talking about another person in the room, you're talking about your children.
Or myself.
You don't count. You understand that, sir. How many? You have 5 kids. What is their age range?
6 to 12.
And you are trying to bar your wife from singing in front of you or your kids unless she gets better at singing?
I know that she can sing well because she shows evidence where she does sing, particularly songs that she knows really, really, really well. She will match pitch really well with those. It's just other ones that she doesn't know as well that she doesn't even try to match pitch. And so I just ask that she try to match pitch.
So, but you answered a different question than the one I asked. You answered the question, does your wife sing well? I asked you would like me to prohibit your wife from singing in front of you or your children or other humans unless she does a better job.
I would like her to make a better effort at trying to match pitch when she sings in front of other people.
Now, this canard about it being offensive to the singer-songwriter, is that something you truly believe, or is that something you're trying to use to lend more gravity to an argument which is a reasonable one, if somewhat monstrous to make, which is you don't like to listen to your wife sing badly?
I believe it a little bit. To be honest, I would not have brought that up as a supporting argument for my own case. I know she likes bringing it up because it makes me sound bad.
Is it something that you said?
It is something I said, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so make the case for me, if you will, that it is the requirement of the singer, presumably whether or not they are surrounded by your children, to honor the song and the songwriter by singing it correctly. Or have I just made the case for you? It seems to me, go on.
That if you really care about the song, that you would try to sing it as correctly as possible. At least, you know, there's reasonable interpretation going on that you can bring your own personal effort in. But if, you know, the recording that you're singing along with is in the key of E and you're singing in the key of B flat, that's creating a dissonance that the song had never intended to have involved.
Well, wait a minute. If you change the key of the song, aren't you just transposing the notes to a key that's easier for you to sing?
That's fine if you're not singing along with the recording. If you're singing along with the recording, then you're getting parallel tritones going along.
Oh, yeah. Well, parallel tritones. How do you answer to that, Andrea? Parallel tritones. I studied counterpoint, and I know what you're talking about. I'm excited to say. And I agree with you. They are disgusting.
Well,
they are discordant to the ear. So,
can I speak?
Well, you certainly can't sing, so you better speak.
All right.
Well, I didn't like that laugh at all.
I don't either. My husband, I love him very, very, very much. He's a music professor and he teaches music theory, which to me is kind of like a foreign language. I'm a smart girl. I went to an Ivy League school, not in New Haven, but I went to one. And I feel like, I don't know, like if he says things like the key of E, the key of B flat, I don't know. I don't really care. I feel like I'm just singing. And so this tritone, all that, it doesn't, I don't understand it. And for me to sit there and try to understand it and then try to sing, it's like something that it's like a foreign language. That's all I can say to you.
I understand what you're saying, but saying that music is like a foreign language to you would not excuse you necessarily, for example, from screaming along the words of a Gerard Depardieu movie when you don't know French.
Right, but I'm sorry, I misspoke. I'm not saying music is a foreign language. The language of music theory, like A major versus A minor and syncopation and all those things.
Sure, we all understand that that's the way your husband Scott shows off to your children and makes himself sound smart all the time. But
yes,
any layperson would understand if you're singing along to a song and you're not singing in tune with that song, with that backing track, it's going to sound at best different, at worst bad. Is that not so?
That is so, but I believe that most people, when they sing along to a song, are just kind of singing their heart out.
I understand, but you are sharing space with other human beings. Let me ask you this question. If it's a particular song, regardless of whatever heavy vocab your hubby is trying to drop on you, are you saying that you don't want to sing in tune to the song because of the principle of you want to sound as bad as Tom Cruise? Or is it the case that you find it difficult to sing in tune to a song?
I feel like when I am singing along that I sound good to myself and that I'm singing well. And I don't feel like trying to learn how to sing it perfectly. Yes, I feel like that's hard to do. And then that wrecks the whole point of just singing along with joy in your heart.
What are the circumstances, Scott, in which Andrea will sing along to a song and expose you and your children to her terrible, terrible singing?
If one of our kids is playing Call Me Maybe on the violin, and she will start, she'll be in the kitchen. We have a big open house, and so she'll be in the kitchen cooking and try to sing along to the Call Me Maybe, but be not even close to the same key as one of our daughters is playing the violin.
I have two questions, one for each of you. Scott, why are you making your child play that terrible song? And Andrea, if your child is trying to practice the violin, why are you singing and distracting your child from learning this terrible song?
Go first, Scott.
It was actually the choice of, I think it was Athena who was playing at the time. She likes the song. I actually kind of like the song myself.
Sure. Well, it's got all those hot tritones. And got some sweet syncopation. It avoids the sin of parallel motion.
Yes, it does.
But Andrea, your daughter, I don't care if you have an open living plan. If someone's trying to practice violin, why are you singing along?
Okay, that is, I feel like, an anomaly and an isolated case because it's happened one or two times. I feel like, I know I'm just, let me finish. When I feel like when he is being most doing this is if we're all in the car together and a song is on and I'm singing it, which happens far more often than Athena practicing violin. And by the way, when she plays it, she's not playing it in tune.
Yeah, well, she's a child.
And she's trying.
She's a child and she's trying. All right. Thank you very much, Scott. I was making your case for you. Now, we have two audio experts here. Audio expert witnesses to evaluate your singing and to offer some insight. So
can I ask them a couple questions?
No, you need to sing. I understand that you are a fan of Jonathan Colton. So may we first call to the stand expert witness Jonathan Colton?
Yay, applause, applause, yay.
Well, that's...
I didn't know if I was supposed to be like super. I don't know how loud I'm supposed to talk.
You're doing fine. You're doing fine. I understand. I've met him before,
but he probably doesn't remember me.
It's clear that you have a hard time evaluating the sound of your voice outside of your head.
Thank you.
So we all appreciate your infirmity and hold nothing against you. You say you have met Jonathan Colton before. Where did you meet Jonathan Colton before?
We live outside of Indianapolis, and he was opening for They Might Be Giants at a theater called The Vogue in Broad Ripple. And we were walking, we went to dinner before, and we're both Jonathan Colton fans. And I always used to enter Vogue from the back, through this back alley. So we were walking there, and I'm like, that's Jonathan Colton. He just went into that van. That's Jonathan Colton, for sure. And Scott's like, no, it's not. Don't be a stalker.
But Scott's like, talking too loud and out of tune.
So then we walked in the back entrance right when he walked out of the van. And I was like, hey, I'm Andrea. This is my husband, Scott. And then I like couldn't say anything else because I was like, what? So.
Do you remember this, Jonathan? Do you remember being stalked by people?
I do.
Broad Ripple, Indiana.
I certainly remember. I remember playing at the Vogue. I have a vague memory of running into them, but I might be conflating it with another time that I ran into somebody else. I don't know.
Well, you missed your chance to sing a Jonathan Colton song to Jonathan Colton. Then we are here with Jonathan Colton. I appreciate that you are trying to put this off as long as possible, but you will sing along to a Jonathan Colton song for Jonathan Colton to hear, and therefore to evaluate whether or not he is offended as the singer-songwriter, as your husband might predict. So which song are you going to sing by Jonathan Colton?
You're asking me?
No, get your daughter.
You're asking me to request a song for him to play? Or am I playing it on my computer?
It may be that your ears don't work in either direction. I am saying you are going to sing a Jonathan Colton song so that we can evaluate how offended he's going to be.
Okay. This is not typical because the music is going to be really far away and not blasting really loud.
Mm-hmm. Just let it go. Let it go.
That's what I do.
That was the most controlled letting it go that I've ever felt. Now, Scott, I don't like your laughing so much. Scott, you mute.
Okay, this is the intro. Pathological monsters, cried the terrified mathematician. Every one of them a splinter in my eye. I hate the penal space and the code curve. I hate the clinic card trying to reset. The Savinsky gasket makes me want to cry.
Andrea, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I think you did a very nice job. Jonathan?
Yes.
First reactions.
I think Andrea did a fine job. You know, it's always hard when a lady has to sing along with the man, because generally different keys work better for different genders. But Andrea was, in this case, singing along in key and for the most part, the right pitches. I am not in any way offended.
So Scott, was this a typical or atypical performance of Andrea's? Was she up all night rehearsing to get this right?
No, I would say this is an example of her trying to sing it correctly. Because I know she has that ability, but then there's other times when she does not try.
And succeeding.
No, she was trying and succeeding, absolutely.
Within the parameters of a non-professional singer, I think that was a very successful sing-along.
Absolutely.
To Mandelbrot set by Jonathan Colton, available at jonathancolton.com. Andrea, is that typical or atypical?
It is typical. I will say there are times if I am like in the shower, in the bathroom, and it's really loud, I'll sing really loud, but I feel like Skype's going to mess that up. And maybe that is when it is more offensive.
Okay. But you're in the shower and you're by yourself.
No, we have a big bathroom. He's probably getting ready or standing in there.
Is your bathroom also part of your open plan living situation?
Our closet, yes, our closet is at the other end of the bathroom. So you have to walk through the bathroom to kind of get dressed or get any of your stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you also have another song that you have prepared for sing along, and I'm bringing in another audio expert. And this audio expert witness is David Reese, an expert karaoke singer. And I would dare say an expert on the very song you're about to sing. The court calls to the stand David Reese.
I'm here. Hi, everybody.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Now, have you listened so far to what's been going on in this courtroom?
Yeah, I have.
Do you have anything you want to say at this point before we go to the next demonstration of the evidence?
Well, I think that the plaintiff and the defendant have set up a false dyad that...
Now, for the benefit of our listeners, that's a very esoteric music term.
It
goes back to 17th century lute tablature.
Yeah.
But you were going to say, what is a false dyad in your words, David?
Well, they've set up, and it's actually very common in music, I think, this tension or this supposed opposition between authenticity, emotional authenticity, and technical proficiency. I don't think much of either of their arguments, but I'm here to just enjoy some music. So,
all right. And do you have a request that you'd like to give? A request for the singer?
Well, I love karaoke, and I think karaoke is the perfect it's the perfect testing ground for these expressions of authenticity and varying degrees of proficiency. And one of my favorite karaoke songs is Brandy, You're a Fine Girl by the 70s band called Looking Glass.
All right. We'll take it over to Andrea, who's going to be performing Brandy, You're a Fine Girl by Looking Glass. Take it away, Andrea.
Past the tunnel way, talk
about their home.
And there's a girl
in a hot town, and she works bring whiskey down, she's brandy, another round, there's some whiskey and wine. The sailor says, brandy, you're a fine girl.
May I stop there? Can you stop there, please, Andrea? Andrea, you are more or less on key to my amateur ears, but I would not say in this case that you were letting go. And in fact, it sort of sounded like...
Because I'm afraid it's going to mess up the sound.
No, I understand. It sort of sounded like maybe you had fallen asleep.
I agree. Because I'm afraid it's going to mess up the sound. So I'll let go if you want me to let go.
Jonathan, what do you think? Should she let go?
I think, Andrea, if you have a way that you can step away from the microphone so you're not singing directly into it, that might reduce your inhibitions and also protect our ears from loudness.
Thank you for the technical weigh-in, Jonathan. David Reese, for the emotional weigh-in. Do you think Andrea should
that was?
Out?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Come on, let's do this.
All right.
Okay,
we're
so
ready,
what
Andrea.
So I'm gonna set the phone down or my microphone down and step away and play the song and sing loudly, but I will not have my headphones on, so I'm going to have to come back. And if it sounds horrible, just mute it for a while.
All right.
Okay.
I always love disclaimers before someone lets go.
There's a port in Western Bay. A 100 ships a day, sailors, time away, talk about their homes. And there's a girl in this harbor town, and she works laying whiskey down. Brandy,
Pass another round. Serves them whiskey and wine. The sailor says, Brandy, you're a fine girl. What a good wife you would be. My could steal a sailor from the sea. Do 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 do.
David Rees, emotion judging, go.
I think we're getting there. I think she's still a little self-conscious. I think she should get a little bit drunk and do it again. But I will say what was interesting on the technical side was Jonathan and I were kind of noting this to each other. It sounded like she was actually kind of harmonizing with the melody instead of really hitting the top line melody. So maybe she's actually... The problem is musically, she's too sophisticated. Her ear is so finely tuned that she leaps naturally to a harmony rather than staying with the melody with the rest of us plebes.
Yeah, she's like Charlie Parker. She's hearing intervals, you know, above the traditional intervals that are played in Western music. So she's got all these like flat 11ths and sharp 13ths. Right, Scott?
Uh-huh. Yes, I always thought that she was advanced.
So, all right. So the question is, does she go on to Hollywood? Jonathan, what's your vote?
To Hollywood? I wouldn't recommend going to Hollywood. You know, you can do this anywhere nowadays.
Jonathan, we actually don't need your internet utopian evangelizing right now.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Well, if I may speak frankly.
Please.
I recognize in Andrea's voice and the way that she is addressing the song a kind of singing that I have heard before, which is that, and I understand what Scott is getting at, is that sometimes she is singing in key. When she lets go a little bit, she's straying a little bit from the melody. And you know, this comes down to what you would call someone's ear. For singing and the ability to sort of match up your voice with what's happening in the music. And so it sounds to me, and I've heard this before in other singers, is that the more exuberant she's getting and the more she lets go, the less technically proficient she is. And I would point out that both of these songs are in terrible keys for her. They are both too low for her to sing comfortably, which is why she is finding it hard to sort of lock in when she starts singing a little more loudly.
Do you think, from a technical point of view, that she could, never mind should, but could reasonably train herself to sing better, even when she is at her most enthused?
You know, that's a difficult diagnosis to make. I think that everyone can benefit somewhat from training and from practice, but... you know, it certainly depends on the instrument that you're born with. You know, all that said, you know, I'll let David speak to this, but I think exuberant singing off key is preferable to lackadaisical singing that is spot on.
David, you said, thank you, Jonathan. David, you said that she should get drunk. I have to say the first round of Brandy, You're a Fine Girl sounded as though she had had a couple of glasses of Hennessy and was now kind of laying her head down on the kitchen table.
Yeah, that's true.
Does she go to Hollywood or not? I guess is what I'm saying. Do we order her not to sing exuberantly?
Well, this gets back to my original problem with this whole case, which is that I feel like Andrea's worried that there's this tension between competence and exuberance, and that somehow if she learned a little bit more about singing and how to control her voice, it would somehow make it harder for her to cut loose and lose herself in the music. Whereas actually the better you are as a musician, the even more pleasure you take from cutting loose. And so I don't think it would be too bad for her just to take a couple of vocal lessons and then go to a karaoke bar and really, really cut loose and sing with confidence, and don't let her husband come and sit in the back of the bar and judge her. Let him babysit all those kids they have.
Sounds good.
Well, actually, it does sound good to you, Scott, because David Rees is basically agreeing with your point of view, which is to say that Andrea can and should better her voice so that she does not sing exuberantly and out of key.
No, Jonathan, but Judge, that's I beg your pardon, Judge, but
no, I appreciate it. Please,
the conclusion is the same, but the logic is different. I'm saying that she should better her voice, not because she's disrespecting Looking Glass or anything like that, but just because she will find singing more fun. She will actually, it will further her own exuberance, her sense of like self-negation and getting lost in the ecstasy of the moment. It will make it more fun for her. I don't care about Scott and his feelings and whether he's having a good time.
Right. So she should become a better singer to please her husband?
No.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Just making sure I understood.
She should become a better singer to please herself.
I see. Andrea, does that argument mean anything to you?
It does, but not in a good way, because my joy is in singing along. I don't want to sing like karaoke. I have no desire to sing it by myself. Like, I'm going to sing along loudly with them at a high volume.
Does it mean anything to you? I mean, I think that we all saw, and I say this respectfully here, or didn't see, I don't have synesthesia. We all heard your voice change once you started to sing more exuberantly. And indeed, technically, you were not quite as adept as the first take when you were really being very careful not to blow us out with your incredible power. Do you think that if you were able to learn to sing exuberantly and as loudly along with your favorite songs, but more technically adept, that would increase your enjoyment, or does that not matter to you?
As long as I would not be distracted by trying to be so technically perfect that I wasn't able to be as enthusiastic.
I understand. Scott, you heard what Jonathan and David said. The situation is that your wife can sing admirably in key. When she is not letting go. She has, as you stated, some difficulty doing the same when she is letting go. Why do you want a wife who never lets go?
Well, I like it when she lets go, but I agree with David that if she could still be matching pitch while letting go, it'll be much more enjoyable both for her and for me.
What would you like me to order if I find in your favor, Andrea?
In my favor, that I could sing anything, anytime, and that he would never have to say anything about my pitch or my key.
Scott, what would you want me to order if I find in your favor?
That Andrea learns how to sing exuberantly and in pitch.
How do you propose that she do that?
She could take some voice lessons. I teach at a nearby university. She could take a voice lessons from one of my colleagues.
I see. But not from you.
No, I don't think that would be a good idea for many.
No, I don't think so either. I just want to make sure we all agree on that. I think I know. I think I've heard everything I need to hear in order to make my decision. I am going to whistle my way into chambers, and when I have a decision, I will return. Baby got back.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman exits the courtroom. Andrea, I don't know whether you will win this case, but that spirited rendition of Brandy convinced me that you will win at life. So congratulations to that. How are you feeling about your legal chances?
I feel good. I feel like I wasn't able to let loose as normal because of, you know, I couldn't turn it up loud enough and that. But I feel really good because I think that emotional exuberance and being able to express yourself and feel good about it, because I do feel good when I sing, is most important. But who knows?
Scott, how do you feel?
I'm feeling pretty good. I felt that one of the expert witnesses basically stated my stance on the whole situation. Though, as he pointed out, I was being rather selfish for my reasons, as opposed to being more concerned about the increase in enjoyment than Andrea would definitely have if she was able to be singing in sync with the recording while being as exuberant as she can be.
Scott, as a music theory professor yourself, would you say it's one of your primary responsibilities or a secondary responsibility to prevent people from enjoying music?
I would say it's secondary. Primary is just to torture musicians themselves.
We'll see how this one turns out. We'll be back in just a second with Judge John Hodgman's verdict.
You're listening to Judge John Hodgman. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. Of course, the Judge John Hodgman podcast, always brought to you by you, the members of MaximumFun.org. Thanks to everybody who's gone to MaximumFun.org/join. And you can join them by going to MaximumFun.org/join. The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by the good folks over there at Squarespace.
Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time. All in one place, all on your terms. Time, Jesse.
Have you heard about this Squarespace Blueprint?
No, tell me all about it.
Squarespace Blueprint lets you choose from a professional layout and build a website for your product or your service or your creations from the ground up. You can accept payments, including Apple Pay, among other things. It is all seamless and easy and comes out gorgeous, whether or not you went into it with big time skills. That's what Squarespace is all about, helping you express yourself and helping you share your work with the world.
Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to www.squarespace.com/Hodgman to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman re-enters the courtroom.
Brandy, you're a fine girl. I guess what I can say, Andrea, is that at least you're not scat singing, which is the worst kind of singing. And I do also have to say a couple of hard truths to you. This is something I never enjoy saying on the Judge John Hodgman podcast. And it's hard to say it even now, which is that your husband is right. In a narrow sense. I don't like saying that, but in a narrow sense, it is absolutely true, because we heard you sing in a controlled way, and you sang in on key, and then you really cut loose. Or even, according to our audio expert, David Reese, he kind of put you at half cutting loose. And there was a appreciable difference in the quality of your singing, not the quality of your singing, but the tone of your singing and your pitch and your ability to sing on key. And so the facts of the case as stated by your husband are true. And furthermore, I also, like Jesse, appreciated very much the great spirit that you brought to that second performance. And I could tell that you were beginning to enjoy yourself more than perhaps any other time on this podcast, which was great. But I cannot lie to you, because I am your judge. It was not something that I would want to listen to for a long time. So in that sense, I say again, your husband is right. And I'm sorry to give you that hard truth. Now, it could be that you could improve your singing through lessons. But that suggests, or some other kind of professional guidance. But that suggests a conundrum, because A, it may be that what you really love about that style of singing is utter abandon and not thinking about training and lessons. And B, to take lessons to improve your singing so that you could sing at that high volume and with that full enthusiasm and, as you say, letting go, would be to suggest that your husband had a point, which is almost an intolerable thing. All of this said, I am going to find in your favor. The reason is that it gives you pleasure to sing, and the pleasure of singing is not something that should ever be diminished, especially not by an academic, especially not by an academic who is your husband. We have, those of us who have spouses, have spouses or partners or roommates or friends who have habits that annoy us. For example, I'm going to say needlepoint, and I'll leave it there just in case my wife is actually listening. And it is part of the contract of marriage to put up with annoying habits, but within reason. This is not a habit, but a pleasure that you take. I do believe that you take specific pleasure in singing badly at the top of your lungs without thinking about whether or not it's good or bad. And I won't permit you to do that. I want you to understand, and I want you to take these home truths to heart, that this is something you need to do in cognizance of the humans around you. You might not want to jump into a full-throated version of Call Me Maybe just because your daughter picks up the violin. And I would be especially wary about doing your full free-falling act when you're in a car with the windows rolled up and a captive audience. That is not a matter of offending a songwriter. That is not a matter of whether or not you enjoy it. That is a matter of common courtesy to other human beings around you. And so I do find in your favor, and in doing so, I hope it will allow you, A, the pleasure that you enjoy singing in this manner, and B, the opportunity and freedom from scrutiny from Hubby McFame over there to consider whether or not eventually, on your own terms and in your own time, taking a vocal class or other ways trying to improve your singing, even at that level, might be the right thing for you, because I do imagine that it would only increase your enjoyment of singing, which is an important enjoyment that we should all enjoy. And by finding fully in your favor, I make that decision utterly severable from your husband's dumb opinion and wholly in your hands. But until then, I ask you to rock on with consideration to the humans around you. This is the sound of a gavel. Judge John Hodgman rules, that is all.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman exits the courtroom. Andrea, how are you feeling?
I feel great. That's what I wanted. And by the way, the judge is right, is that I just enjoy belting it out at the top of my lungs, and I sometimes don't really care if it's on key.
But you understand that that's a private pleasure. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't be forcing that on other people in closed spaces all the time.
No, I would not. No, I agree with you that I will only do it in private.
Suddenly, I feel like we're talking about something else.
Scott, how do you feel?
I feel like I'm probably going to have to invest in some good player earplugs.
But I'm going to do it in private.
Yeah, Scott, you know what? I order you to not be a jerk. Don't be a know-it-all jerk, Scott.
But I'm happy that my wife is being encouraged in her enthusiasms.
Well, thank you guys both for being on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
And thanks again to Jonathan Colton and David Reese, our expert audio witnesses.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Brandy, you're a fine girl. Skilly dee dop doo da dee dee doop dop doo doo doo. Scat singing all around the place. I'm singing and scatting in chambers.
Judge Hodgman, Judge Hodgman. Judge Hodgman.
Skilly dee beep boop bop.
Judge Hodgman.
What is it? What? Excuse me. Was I bothering you again?
Well, I just want to clear the docket, if you don't mind.
Oh, I don't mind at all.
Okay, here's something from Kristen. I have a small dispute for the
docket.
Can
you sing it, Jesse? Can you sing it?
Brandy?
I have a small dispute for the docket. My husband John and I were hiking in the Columbia River Gorge, and I was struggling against a steep incline. I commented next time we should take a flat hike.
This is very difficult to listen to. not that we're recording any of this for an audience. Obviously, right now we're private and in chambers, but...
My husband said that was impossible because no such thing as a flat hike. I said, what about walking through a flat forest? And he said that was only a walk. I resent the idea of downgrading a hike on a plane or in the desert to a walk, but he maintains that a hike has to be uphill. Who is right?
I think your switch to a sort of Gilbert and Sullivan style at the end was probably what best served the material.
I did a little patter singing. It's true. It's true. A little patter.
Kristen is wondering, do you have to go up an incline in order for a walk to be considered a hike?
Right, because that's what her husband is telling her, right?
Yeah, for example, what about a long walk in the forest that happens to be flat?
Are you explaining this for the audience? The way an opera has subtitles underneath it? Because I think I just sung that.
Number one, they're super titles. They're above it.
Excuse me.
And number two, yes, I am.
All right. So here's the thing about this. The husband says, no, a hike is only uphill. It's tough and it's manly. Your walk through the forest is a unstrenuous flatland lady thing.
You know that's what? Something a deer could do.
Yeah, exactly. Husbands should buy dictionaries. Do you know what I'm saying? It's true that the transitive verb to hike, when not referring to walking, when you're hiking something, that always refers to lifting it up, like a wage hike, for example, which is a mythical thing that never happens. And I also understand that most husbands love to separate activities into tough, difficult, uphill things and unstrenuous, flatland lady things, and then tell everyone they know the secret difference between them. And hold that over them, even their own wives. But language, as it's currently defined, differs with husbands. In outdoorsy, naturey terms, all dictionaries that I consulted basically treat the term hike as synonymous with walk, amble, tramp, and of course my favorite, perambulate. It may be that language will change through usage eventually, but I suspect that by the time the language changes, this husband might have fallen off a ledge accidentally. In the meantime, he can use the UK distinction, whereas all hikes and walks are rambles, which is awesome, and specific mountaineering style hikes are hill walks or fell walks. At least that's what the internet tells me. I don't know.
Are you aware of this thing that English people do where they go on a vacation and the vacation is just walking through other people's cow fields?
Yeah,
until they get to the next. That sounds great.
It's fantastic because they have an intricate network of footpaths that have been public property since they're before there was private property, and they're maintained. And if you own a farm in the English countryside and it has a public footpath through it, you have to keep it clear and you have to build or create a wooden staircase over the wall or fence of your farm, or some kind of device that'll allow any dumb human who wants to walk through your yard to walk through your yard. And one time I was taken on a ramble some years ago by the fantastic novelist Susanna Clark, author of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, whom I was profiling at the time. And she took me on a ramble with her partner, Colin Greenland, through the Peak District of England, which became my very favorite place. And at one point, it was like following a secret treasure map, because she had the ordnance map, and she's like, well, we got to walk up this cobblestone street here, and then apparently there's going to be a gap in the wall. And there, sure enough, there was like a secret passage in this wall. And then we walked through this wall and found ourselves in a small enclosed field, enclosed by a high stone wall with two gigantic white bulls standing on either end of it with about 3 feet between them. And the path went right between the bulls. And it was terrifying and fantastic. And we all survived until we found the other gap in the wall. And I got to say, if your dumb husband doesn't find that flat walk betwixt bulls strenuous and manly, I have no use for him.
Here's something from Nolan, and this is, I think, representative of several emails we got about, I don't know if you remember this, from the case Gas, Grass, or Justice. We discussed
this. I actually pronounce it Gas, Grass, or Just Ass.
We discussed it when we were clearing the docket. We had a case where someone's grandparents or parents had been booked into a hotel room, which they later found out had been advertised as being haunted. And they were wondering if that should have been disclosed when the hotel room was assigned. It wasn't at the time. Here's what Nolan wrote. I'm a first-year law student and felt compelled to bring to your attention the case of Stambovsky v. Ackley, decided in New York Supreme Court Appellate Division in 1991. Stambovsky had purchased a house from Ackley and then later found out that not only was the house allegedly haunted, but that Ackley had profited from the house's reputation in a variety of ways and concealed this fact during the transaction. The court allowed Stambovsky to rescind the contract because the house's haunted reputation negatively impacted its value. For the purposes of the sale, the haunting was a material fact.
What?
Yeah, in this decision, it literally contains this sentence. Whether the source of the spectral apparition seen by defendant seller is parapsychic or parapsychogenic, having reported their presence in both a national publication and the local press, defendant is estopped to deny their existence, and as a matter of law, the house is haunted.
First of all, Jesse, for people who don't understand paranormal legalese, the difference between parapsychic and psychogenic is that parapsychic is uphill and psychogenic is flat.
There's also a number of interesting ghost puns in here. Here's a selection from it. The notion that a haunting is a condition which can and should be ascertained upon reasonable inspection of the premises is a hobgoblin, which should be exorcised from the body of legal precedent and laid quietly to rest. They should give this guy a sitcom.
I feel like John Oliver listening to Andy Saltzman make puns on the Bugle. I also noticed that he wrote, from the perspective of a person in the position of plaintiff herein, a very practical problem arises with respect to the discovery of a paranormal phenomenon. Quote, who are you going to call? As a title song to the movie Ghostbusters asks. Ugh. You know what? This is Judge Rubin who made this opinion. Judge J. Rubin. And this is what happens, you understand? This is the perversion of justice that happens when lawyers try to be funny. First of all, they make puns. Second of all, in the service of entertaining themselves, they allow a house to be deemed haunted as a matter of law. And money now has to change hands because of this guy's desire to make terrible puns. Now look, I don't practice law, right? I don't pretend that I know how to. I'm just making jokes around the law here. And you notice that none of my rulings are actually binding, because I don't know what these people do afterwards. I hope that they do what I tell them to do, but I have no power over them. I find this whole case to be mischievous, disruptive, and worst of all, full of puns, and I toss it out of law. Ghosts don't exist is the other thing. Ghosts don't exist.
Some lawyers are funny, though. What about John Larroquette and Marky Post?
That's true. I take it back. I'm estopped from denying that John Larroquette is funny.
Our thanks this week to Frank, I'm going to say
Magog.
Mick Giaug. for suggesting our title. If you want to get in on the title suggesting action, like us on Facebook at Judge John Hodgman and suggest your own title for a future episode when we ask. Because we usually ask on Facebook and we use the best one.
And of course, if you are not a lover but a fighter, I want to hear from you. Please send me personally your disputes by emailing Hodgman at MaximumFun.org or going to MaximumFun.org/JJHo. And I will review each of your disputes personally. And if they are appropriate for the podcast, you'll find out about it. And if they're appropriate for the pages of the New York Times Magazine, you will find out about that as well. And if they are full of puns or 17 paragraphs long, you'll never know, because I won't write back to you.
We'll see you next time on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is a production of MaximumFun.org. Our special thanks to all of the folks who donate to support the show and all of our shows at MaximumFun.org/donate. The show is produced by Julia Smith and me, Jesse Thorne, and edited by Mark McConville. You can check out his podcast, Super Ego, in iTunes or online at GoSuperEgo.com. You can find John Hodgman online at AreasOfMyExpertise.com. If you have a case for Judge John Hodgman, go to MaximumFun.org/JJHO. If you have thoughts about the show, join the conversation on our forum at forum.MaximumFun.org and our Facebook group at Facebook.com/Judge John Hodgman. We'll see you online and next time right here on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.